Help is available for postpartum depression. Call 1-833-TLC-MAMA. That's 1-833-852-6262 for 24/7 free confidential support for pregnant and new moms. If you are in mental health distress or have a suicidal crisis, call or text the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988 for free and confidential support. The only thing better than watching TV is taking it personally. You guys, it's Taking It Personally. So excited for a return guest. One of my favorite people. You know her as a content creator and host of the podcast High and Low. Welcome to the Valley. Bravo, bravo, ducking, bravo. BBDB, how are we doing?
It's good. It's so nice to be in the Valley. It's really hot here.
It's really hot.
There's a lot of things going on.
So talking about temperature systems, weather systems, whatever, is it humid also? Is it just like an Arizona heat? Like, what's
it's an
the
Arizona
vibe?
Heat. From what I recall, it was just like you were on the surface of the sun. Yes. Just you walk outside and it's just light. The sun is right here and it's just so bright and it's so hot. And you're just like a lizard, just trying to get to your car or to wherever you got to go. It's just hot. It's a desert. It's like a desert landscape.
Well, then good for Ariana for moving to Hollywood Hills. My God, that sounds like a nightmare. Is that why houses are like, or used to be cheaper, but now I think they're expensive maybe?
Yeah, that's like Encino or any of the places like that people actually end up living instead of in Beverly Hills or wherever, or Malibu. I mean, that's why Malibu is so beautiful and ideal. You get that the breeze off the water that you don't feel in the valley.
Well, when it comes to the weather system that has been episodes of the Valley this season.
Typhoon, baby, typhoon.
I am loving that both direct heat, but also the wind. I'm feeling that breeze and I'm loving it. I really am loving it.
Yeah, it's good. So, have you watched every episode?
Of course. I mean, we're recording.
I'm just asking.
I'm a professional. I would
I'm
not record.
Just asking.
I have never recorded in 500 plus episodes of Annie's Girls and Taking It Personally. I have never had the main show episode. I've never talked about it without watching it. Not once, not ever in 7 years. In
That's
7 years. 7 year itch. 7 year stretch.
Absolute pro. So what are your thoughts? Who's your favorite? Who's your least favorite? That's what I want to know out of all the characters.
Well, oh God. Okay. Who's my high and who's my low? Is what we're saying? Okay.
Yeah.
My high by far. And obviously, a lot to discuss when it comes to this episode, but every episode has been Nia.
Absolutely.
I love the sound of her voice. I could listen to her do a calm up forever and ever, amen. I love her energy. She just seems like an actual mature grown up. Mm-hmm. I love the way that she processes things. I love her choice in a partner. She, God forbid, breaking news to the Bravo universe, actually has a partner.
This person is
partnering with
Danny's
her
a gem.
Whatever his name is, I never remember his name.
In a world of Jacksons, be a Danny.
Yeah, in a world of Jacksons, be a Danny, but you're probably not going to get Danny because I think there's literally only one available on planet Earth. I find her really soothing. And my low, which is also my high, is Jesse, because I can't imagine ever, not once, but again, this is a universe that includes Jax, looking at Jesse and being like, he's the guy. I can't imagine it. I'm so thankful he's on this show. I'm concerned that their impending divorce means one of them will be off. I hope not. I hope they stay on forever.
No, I think they would both stay on for sure. Unless she snags a rich guy, which I think will happen, and then she'll just disappear into a mansion somewhere.
Well, I mean, there's some director who she's been.
Yeah, she's not going to have a hard time finding somebody. She'll be fine.
I'm not concerned about her finding someone. I'm concerned about them finding themselves off of this universe. And I cannot allow that to happen.
No, I think they're going to enjoy. I think they're going to enjoy this notoriety. I think they've been waiting for it for a while. Jesse has. Jesse's been waiting for his close up for a long time. And we're looking.
Okay, so who's your pick? Who's your high and low?
Probably very similar. You know, my low, I you know, I wane back and forth between a couple of people. But Nia is such a gem. I just want to protect her. I want to wrap a warm cloak around her and keep her safe. I want to tell her that everything she's going through is normal. She's being very open about challenges with postpartum depression. We should talk about it more. Every episode I have done about it where she mentions it, I always mention a number you can call, which is 1-833-TLC-MAMA. For anybody having any issues with that level of sadness that you feel after you have a child. And mine lasted for 2 years. So it can last. It was a solid 2-year chunk of time. And she's being really vulnerable about that, which is so wonderful for people to see. So I love her. My low has Hesse. I'm calling him the Jester too. I got a couple of loving little nicknames for the Jester, the Hester. And he is just easy to dislike, you know what I mean? Because he's kind of like an aloof person. It's not even malice. It's not even malice. That's just like who he is. That's just how he operates. His wife, though, you know, as much as we feel for her, she doesn't seem, you know, awesome. She's really coming for Kristen in such a hardcore way. And I'm like, well, you're also, I think, trying to bury the lead of like why we're talking about any of this in the first place, which we'll get to. And then Janet, I really like her. And then also, she's the one that started this, but she kind of got out scot-free as well. So it's fun to only love Nia and then just be like a fun viewer of everything else. Like, I'm not personally offended when anybody else is in the thick of it. I just want to make sure Nia's good.
I honestly think Nia, and what's her husband's name? Christopher?
Danny.
Okay, I think Nia and Danny are like genuinely good people who find themselves on this show. And
yeah,
then everybody else is a villain. Everybody else has some sort of level of villain energy, including most especially Janet.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing about it too is, isn't that so much like life? Because you always feel like you're the normal couple and everybody else is like a little bit fucking crazy. And that's, you like, you can relate with Nia and Danny. You're like, oh, that would be us. And these people that we're hanging out with, like, they really just need to evolve or whatever. But yeah, they're nuts. A lot of their friends are troubled.
Can I ask you a question? When it comes to what Nia is opening up with and being vulnerable mm-hmm. about, which is so incredible and important to hear, with your own journey as a parent and what you just mentioned, having experienced
crippling PPD for 2 years, terrible. Yes.
So what was that process of finding yourself in just kind of like a new body, like emotionally a new body after giving birth?
Horrifying. Worst thing I've ever done. Yeah.
Can you share a little bit about?
So worst thing that I've ever gone through, because I was extremely fit, very healthy, right? Like I had like baby abs showing. I felt very strong. And that's important to me to feel like I can take care of myself. Then I had a baby and my body, it was just like, you know, Dr. Doolittle, like just huge. Just I ballooned up. After I had the baby, my body was swollen for like a month afterwards. So my foot was like doubled in size. It looked like I was having some sort of allergic reaction. I think it was all the drugs they gave me trying to induce. I'm not really sure. But and then I had to have a C-section. So I couldn't really move a lot. It was hard to get in and out of bed. And so you go from being a very fit, capable person to then having a baby screaming for you, needing you every few hours. And it's hard for you to move. It's hard for you to get around. And it just put me into a really sad place. It might have hit me either way. It might have hit me whether or not I felt fully physically able. I think it probably would have, because I don't know. I just felt like it's almost like a wave. She described it herself too as a wave of sadness that like washes over you. And that's really what it is. And I've described it on my pod a long time ago, where I said to me, it was like, if you could imagine the meanest things in the world that someone could say to you, that's what was playing in my head all day. You're awful at this. You're never going to be good at this. So it wasn't a detachment for me with my baby or anything like that. I loved my child more than anything. It was, you're not good enough. Why have you done this? This is a mistake. You're a detriment to everyone. You should just exit out of this scene. You know, those thoughts, very strong all day. And I knew, like, what happened to me? Old me would never think this. Old me was ready for this challenge. Old me optimistically put all of these things in place to be successful at this job. Why can't you get with it? Like, old you set yourself up for success here, and you have a support system, and you planned this, and you waited a long time to make this conscious choice, knowing this was going to be a really big deal in your life, and you built your life in such a way that you could do this well. You know, get with it, snap out of it. And I could not snap out of it. And it was just, I had to overcome that every single day. And that's kind of what she talked about too, is that it's just something that's there all the time. And you realize it's not completely reality, but it is for you in that moment, and you can't get out of it.
And at what point did that externalize, of like, in addition or maybe instead of the internal conversation, at what point did that become external? Were you having conversations with your partner about this? Were you speaking to family about this? At what point did you?
So I handled mine horribly. And I think that's why I try to be so vocal about it, so that others don't do what I did. I'm not a great advocate for myself. I'm definitely better for other people than I am for myself. Because when it comes to me, I'm like, I'm okay, I can handle it. And it's overwhelming, and you don't know what to do. You're like, I guess I should talk to someone. Who are you going to talk to? Who am I going to trust? How would I find that person? If I'm honest about the thoughts that I'm having, what are the possible repercussions? Are they going to be like, you know, get her out of here, put her somewhere and take me away from the situation? That's not good. I can't do that to my family. And it's like, it's very difficult to think about what the hell am I supposed to do about this, really. And so at least, you know, there's a phone number now. That's like a Department of Health and Human Services phone number that we talked about, the 833 TLC Mama. And so it's anonymous, confidential support that you can get to talk it out. And I think it all comes back to, you know, we used to do this in community circles. This used to be something where you're not just in a house with a baby by yourself for long stretches of time, that it used to be kind of a sisterhood and people supporting each other, cracking a joke every now and then. It's a very isolating experience if you're having a child and you're home with a child that needs you, needs you, needs you all day, and you don't feel like yourself. So I handled it terribly. I didn't see anybody. I didn't talk to anybody. I was just really sad for like 2 years. So coming out of it, I'm glad that people talk about it.
Well, if there is one thing that I can say as an absolute outsider who has not had a child, may his memory be a blessing. PK Kemsley, Kemsley Galley. The one thing that I, just in listening to you, when you say I handled it terribly, I just would love, just as an outsider, just my two shekels is like, you were in a situation that was incredibly difficult and you found yourself through it at the end of it. That's not horrible to me. Maybe it's like had I known, you can only do what you can do based on the limited information that you may have had at that point. And also trying to find information when you're dealing with depression and you're dealing with being a new parent and all of these like sort of not counterproductive, but it's like a war between who you were, who you are. You're speaking a new language you've never spoken before. To think that I will be able to talk to someone about this, that I'll be able to do that research when you're just trying to deal with trying to get through the day.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I just want to give you a little bit, not that you're asking for it, but I do think that you deserve to have grace for yourself at that point and be like, I don't think the way that you handled it is quote unquote horrible. I think that you've been able to come out of it, and maybe with the resources that you now know about now, that phone number, for example, which I'll put in the show notes for this episode, might change how you think you could have behaved then. But who knows how you could have with that new information? Because we don't know. I think that you talking about it is an example of how unhorrible, which is a new word, you were in this, because you're able to describe your feeling in a way that is like external to that, which is extremely important. You know, like you can still feel connected to it without being inside of it. So I just want to say, applaud you for your bravery in talking about this, and also say, like, to me, it's not a matter of being horrible. You don't need to criticize yourself for something that was out of your control.
True. I did not know what to do. I mean, I remember trying to, the frustrating thing too, is I remember trying to express it a few times. I went into, because they have checkups for the baby, right? But they don't have checkups for the mom. So after you give birth, you go in like every couple of weeks for the baby to get looked at. And at my first couple of appointments, I was like, yeah, I can't stop crying. I don't know if that's a normal thing. And they were like, oh, okay, well, you know, keep an eye on that. And that might be something that we should. I was like, okay. I was like, so how much worse does it have to get, you know? And then I remember telling a friend, like, I can't stop crying. I just am like the saddest I've ever been, like every day. And they're like, well, you might need to think about talking to someone. And so for both of those where I would just like throw out a little crumb of like, hey, I'm really in a situation here that I don't know what to do. There was no real answer. There was no real directive. It was like, well, we better keep an eye on that. Who's going to keep an eye on it? Me. I'm the one telling you that this is happening. But I don't think that we are as prepared to say, call this number. At least that's something to start with. Do this, do that. Whereas if something was wrong with the baby, they'd be like, oh my God, well, here, let's get this going right away. Not the adult in the house, in the quiet house with the baby who's also trying to deal with their own thing. So I really think we all need to get better about it for sure. And I do wish that at the end of the episode, they had a resource. You know, they haven't done that.
Yeah, they haven't done that. That seems like
and we're all women. We're primarily women watching this show, and they're appealing to people who have kids, who are thinking about having kids. Like, put the resource up. I might send a note. We'll see.
I think you should. And unfortunately, sometimes it feels like the network only puts resources up when it's like troubleshooting criticisms against them in advance. Uh-huh. If it's, God forbid, just a woman sharing her feelings and experiences, why would we need to put a resource up for that? And exactly what you were just saying, your responses weren't horrible. The system is horrible.
The system is horrible. It's not set up to check on the mother.
Right. And I would think, again, as an outsider, that one of the symptoms that a person may feel in this is the sense of just such sensitivity and aloneness that would prevent a person from being able to research and make choices. Like, I've dealt with depression, anxiety. God bless my psychiatrist. God bless my antidepressant. I've never had kids. I have not had a specific situation like what you're experiencing. But I can certainly, again, as an outsider, absolutely empathize with and connect to a feeling of isolation when you put a child on top of that and feeling so alone, but also knowing how dependent this infant is with you, just the layers of fear, anxiety, exhaustion, depression, anger. I mean, it feels to me like a system. It's in many ways that women and new parents are set up to fail. Like, how are we supposed to get through this without having support systems and without having people who are checking in? Like, what advice would you give to someone who is the partner of someone who's just given birth or the friend of someone who's just given birth? What would you wish you had heard, and what could be better, you know, to offer to someone or to check in with someone?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I have tried to do proactively. So whenever anyone tells me like, oh my God, we're pregnant, we're expecting, I'm like, that's so great. And I always go to the person's partner, whoever it is. And I'm like, hey, just FYI, may or may not happen. Here's what happened with me. Be on the lookout for these things. If you see any of these things or the mood is different and it's consistent, like more than a couple of days a week, whatever, don't just be like, let's watch it and see what happens. Here's some stuff, you know, that I would do. Reach out to, you know, her doctor and find out, or here's this number that I know of now, or anything. Take them outside, get out of the house, have somebody watch the baby, send them away for a massage. I was not good about that. I did not plan things for myself to leave the house. And I had this overwhelming fear, right? So I never wanted to take, you know, the baby out of the house. I was like, well, what if I need to pump? And I'm overwhelmed. I'm already instantly overwhelmed of how am I going to do all of this? I'll just stay in the house. And so that's my MO anyway. Like, I'm such a homebody. But in a situation like that, like, you got to laugh. You got to remember who you are. You got to go out with your friends. And so that episode showing Nia trying to get out of the house, trying to remember who she is, and she had twins 2 months ago. I think it's good that she's got the TV show. It's probably added stress to her, but I think it's probably more of a positive than a negative, because it's something to focus on And she has her laughs with her girlfriends. She's got things to look forward to. And I think that's only a positive when you're feeling low. So it bothered me that she had to go home. And I wish that they had had more childcare, knowing that she was going to have that girls' night. So, but either way, I think it's important to talk about. And I think people just need to be on the lookout for that and not just assume that the person and their partner know what to do. It's like, feel free. If you didn't just have a baby come out of your cooch and you have 2 seconds and you see that your friend is in a bad place, feel free to just take them out to lunch or watch the baby for an afternoon if you can do it. They sleep most of the time anyway when they're brand new, and give them some resources and say, here's a phone number I looked up. Here's something that I thought maybe might be useful to you. If not, you know, whatever, great, but just in case.
Paris is always a good idea. And when I schlep on over to Europe, to my favorite city in the world, I bring with me a few important phrases that I have learned from housewives. C'est bon, chic c'est la vie. Je m'appelle the Countess, n'est-ce pas, Luann? And while those key phrases are important when speaking to any French bravoholic, for other matters of life, that's where Rosetta Stone comes in. Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including, of course, French. It features fast language acquisition. It immerses you in so many ways. There's no English translations, so you really learn to speak, to listen, and to think in that language. It's an intuitive process. You pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. J'adore Chris Manzo. Et toi? There's a speech recognition filter which gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's convenient with desktop and app options, and it's an amazing value. Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. A steal. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, AGs can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Today. Conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andyscrolls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today. I just came back from the salon, and for the record, I went with a sassy little bob and quiet luxury shade of blonde. Yes, that's literally what we're calling it, quiet luxury. Aside from trips to the salon, I don't actually blow out my hair. My hair is naturally wavy, and that's why I love Way. Way's new anti-frizz cream is a lightweight cream that provides immediate frizz control that lasts for up to 72 hours. I know that I have a limited amount of time with wet, wavy hair in which to get myself in order. And that is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It has notes of bergamot, Italian lemon, violet, and more. And it smells unbelievable. Truly, as someone who is a little bit sensitive to scents, I put this in my hair and I feel great. It also genuinely pairs well with my perfume, which I appreciate. I don't blow out my hair because after years of color processing and attempting to make it straight, I know it looks better and stays healthier when I avoid blow drying, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. I've used products, especially with wavy hair, where it feels heavy and looks kind of wet. And that's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream, because it enhances the natural waves in my hair. I still look like me, just a little elevated. And P.S., I am way obsessed with Way's other bestsellers. Their leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, my personal favorite. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to THEOUAI.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's THEOUAI.com with promo code Andy.
Be proactive about it.
I love that. And what you're saying about Nia and the show potentially being good for her and a good escape or connector, I also think about Identity, where it's like her identity is now attached to this show in a way that might be positive, of like, we're inside this universe that can feel very, very small, but also all-encompassing and overwhelming, of being a parent to three kids under two. There's also another universe that I am a part of where, yeah, I'm going to talk about my experiences as a parent. I'm hopefully going to feel comfortable in talking about how I feel right now as a mom and how complicated that is and overwhelming and stressful that can be. And also I'm doing other things because of my responsibility of being on this show that I think is helpful too. The thing about Daniel, Danny, Steven, whatever his name is, calling her Charles, Michael, is that their apartment, like the fucking AC went out and it was 89 degrees or something. That is terrible. I'm sure he called his landlord, super whomever, immediately. I do just wish, like, of all of the times that she could have had, I wish that there could have been a family member to step in. Maybe they went to a hotel for the night or whatever it was.
I was like, problem shooting in the back of my head, like, Danny, before you make that call, what else could we have done here?
Call anybody else. And I also understand that he's probably feeling overwhelmed, but I just think... I just wished for her that she had, but I know there's extenuating circumstances. That is an emergency if it's 90 degrees.
If the twins are that uncomfortable, then sometimes like a baby just wants that mom to be there. So yeah. I get that, but it's like, get them out of there. You know, I don't know. That was rough. And the only thing I can say is they do have childcare, and I wish that they had planned to have extra childcare for when he was going to be home alone at night with the three. And I think she was always planning on going home because she's pumping, she's breastfeeding. So that's every, like, I think she's doing every 2 hours, which is, I did every four. And so that means if you think about that in your mind, that I think that plays into it too. I did not get more than 3 hours and 45 minutes of sleep at a time for a year. I don't know how long she's planning on doing it for. So whenever I see anybody tapping out of breastfeeding, I'm like, do you? There will never be a drop of judgment because I had nothing to hold on to mentally. So I was like, I'm accomplishing this. I'm doing this. And I just don't know how much it did for me. But I kept telling myself it was something I could do, so I should do it. Anyway, I felt for her because she needs laughter. She needs good times. She needs levity right now.
And I hope that, you know, I don't know how she's doing in real time, but I hope that she has the support that she needs. And I think an important part of what the conversation between her and her nameless husband, who I love, is, you know, like this, your feelings are valid. I think that's something that everyone deserves to hear, most especially a new mom in her situation. I cannot imagine a dog, honestly. And that's my goal in life. I want to be a dog parent. Like, so like the idea of like this universe is so alien to me. And I just have nothing but empathy and sympathy and honestly a sense of like wonder of just getting through that, because it just sounds like a life that for a period of time is lived in a sense of triage, and that's so unbelievably unsustainable in a way that it just, I have nothing but empathy and support for anybody listening who's gone through it or is going through it, or is Nia just kind of figuring out a way to talk about this in front of a camera crew, and also to her husband, knowing how many eyes are going to be on her at this moment. I just hope that she feels support from the cast and from the audience.
Oh, I'm sure she does. I hope. I mean, I haven't written her yet. I really need to. But when she was talking in the last episode, she starts choking up and crying while she's nursing a baby, saying that she tried to Google it. That is the essence of it. That is how ill-prepared new moms are for this. That is a failure of our entire system.
Right.
That she's trying to Google what it is she's actually feeling, because no one has ever described to her that wave of suffocating sadness that takes over every bright spot in your mind. And she's out here trying to Google it. Like, that's horrendous. And he's wiping a tear. And I was irritated how Bravo was handling it, because then they have a producer asking her, she's talking about it, she's being very vulnerable in her confessional. And he's like, so what is it really? Is it like a rejection of like love and your family and all that? Is that what it is really? And she starts crying. No, it's not a rejection of love and your family and all that. She just said what it was. It's a wave of sadness. And I went off on, you know, on my podcast about it. It's like, can we get a woman in here? Can we get a woman who's gone through it talking to her? Why we got to play 20 questions with this man to define this, you know, on this show? But anyway, yeah, they need to get better about that. But I think she's probably helping a lot of people. And I hope that her DMs are flooded with support.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I feel very optimistic that they are.
Oh, for sure.
And I think that's where overwhelmingly, like, the Bravo audience and our, you know, shouting about stuff is really important, too, where it's like, let's be as vocal with supporting someone and just like surrounding her with just love and empathy and maybe our own experiences or stories if we have them to share and feel so comfortable doing so. And mm-hmm. I'm glad that we spent the time talking about this, because I do think it's really important. And this is where having these kinds of conversations is really key, and just kind of like listening to another person's experience and understanding the gravity of what we're watching on TV is like, that can be really important for somebody watching who might be about to have a baby or with a child or dealing with thoughts and feelings well after potentially the first couple years, or doesn't have a kid but understands that feeling of isolation and disconnection and sadness and grief, maybe grief of like, this is not what I thought my experience was going to be. And what she was saying, she had a kid prior, she didn't deal with this, and
that's
now
right.
She's dealing with, and it's like the grief of like, where is the joy that I felt before, or where is the joy that everybody told me I was going to feel? I think life
that's
is really complicated, and our experiences as women are really complicated, and it's important to hear them and to listen. So I'm so thankful to you for sharing your experiences. I do want to zhuzh just a little, because there's another experience we're hearing about that is in its own way complicated when it comes to Jax and Brittany, mm-hmm. and seemingly the way that he has weaponized her motherhood against her when she's drinking, when she's not doing things in a way that he appreciates, if she's not cleaning enough,
yeah.
whatever else, that somehow that is... to her, he's assigning to her the tag of like bad wife, bad parent.
See, now that's what I thought when I first watched it, and I went off.
Okay.
But
okay.
Hold on, because later on in the episode, I think he defines it better, and that they are just doing a very bad job of cutting up his true feelings about this. Because in the beginning, you know, they showed that clip of her wrapped in the towel, her hair is wet, and he's like, you're a mom, like, act like a mom, you want to have more kids, like, stop drinking or whatever. Now, I think she had just thrown up, so that's what it seemed like. It seemed like she had just thrown up. He sees how wasted she is at this little kid. Like, he's holding Cruz saying this to her. So, and I said, like, look, there's nobody that I will give more leeway to than a mother of a small child. If they go out and they're busting bottles and dancing on bars, I didn't see a thing. I didn't see a thing. You do you. Get it out. Because there's no job that is more stressful in life, right? At the same time, later on in the episode, he says, like, I'm trying to tell her, like, you're a mom. We need you. We need you. You could be causing yourself serious health problems by getting this level of drunk, throw up drunk every time you drink. That changed it for me. I was like, okay, it's almost as if, you know, I was saying to my husband, like, you're a dad now. I'm not shaming him that he can't have a good time while he's a dad. And these are conversations we've had, right? It's like, we can't go to this party and you can't get throw up drunk because then you're done for the day. And we don't have a dad in the house for the rest of the day. You know what I mean? Like, we don't do that anymore to each other. Like, we used to get sloppy when we were first dating and stuff. But now, as a parent, you can't take yourself out of the equation and not really impact other people. So it's like, fine if you go on a trip and you have fun with your friends or something. But if you're going to come back to the house, don't be a wasted parent coming back to the house. Like, that has repercussions and impact on everybody else in the house. I think that's what he's saying, and the concern for her health. I was very pissed off when she's saying to people that he criticizes her body, that she doesn't feel attractive. I don't know what words he's saying to her or not saying to her. He does seem very checked out. He was yawning when she was telling him that she needs him to make her feel special and attractive and loved. They've definitely got some issues, but I do think he has valid concerns.
And I think one of her responses, though, was like, he does that more. Or like she said,
you do that too. And he was like, I don't throw up. I don't get that kind of drunk. And so until I see footage of that, because I haven't been a super long time watcher of VPR, I don't know how crazy he gets when he drinks. I've seen him pants somebody on Valley, but I haven't seen him like puking and hungover.
Well, I mean, I definitely have, but the VPR has been going on for so long. They're at a different point in their lives. So I'm not going to compare him to the life that we saw prior to this current chapter with Cruz. I don't know. Yeah. We haven't seen them on TV for a couple years. I don't know what has changed in their lives for better or worse during this time.
Absolutely.
But this whole them not having sex with each other is like, listen, people go through stages and periods of life where they have no energy for it. Maybe they're going through their own thing where they don't feel sexy, or they don't feel like they can be that intimate. But
her perception is that he's not attracted to her, and that he says things, however intentional or not intentional. People are telling me Jax is a terrible person, and he's always been like this, and he convinced Brittany to get plastic surgery, and because he was paying for it, he wanted her to go from advancing to a C cup to like a triple D or something. Yeah. And I saw footage of her, and somebody posted it, of when they were first dating. And she was so cute. I mean, she just looks different, right, without the breast implants and all of that. And I was like, it just makes me sad that she didn't feel as beautiful as I look at her and I see how just adorable and wonderful, just looks-wise, you know, and that they both felt like she needed to, you know, augment that. Happy for her that she did it, if she's happy with it. I'm just saying it's interesting to look back and see if she's saying that he's always kind of done this and made her feel that way. Longtime fans are telling me that he's always kind of pushed her to change her body or augment her body. It's, yeah. Don't listen to men. It's the bottom line.
I don't know. It gets into this, you know, because Brittany's talking about their separation. I don't know what the future for them. I don't know what that looks like. It sounds like she's given him an ultimatum of he needs to go to therapy. He needs to do things X, Y, and Z. He hasn't done any of that, according to Brittany, and I believe her. I don't know what went through her head at a certain point. I mean, you love who you love, but like, and I'm not blaming her for the current state of her marriage, but he very clearly showed her during their relationship by cheating on her, by lying to her repeatedly, by not speaking to her in a way that felt respectful or honest or kind. Jax has never been kind as a partner or oftentimes as a man. I don't know why she chose him. I understand that she fell in love with him. I think she had faith that, not intentional. I think she had faith that he would change, maybe adapt to fatherhood, but maybe fatherhood just adapted to him.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where it's really hard for us as normies to look at these people who their number one goal in life might be stay on TV at all costs. And so we don't, when we think about matching ourselves with a partner, that's not a factor for us. Okay. But that is, seems to be a factor for them. I can't explain why Ariana and Sandoval lasted as long as they did. I don't know how she was with him. She had the love goggles on. She appreciated him. She liked that he was in the band. They had a whole thing going. And they've said a couple of times that they were like a team. He referred to them as like a team. We're a package deal. We are in companies. Do you own things together? That can start to play into it. So whatever she forgave, for whatever reasons she forgave it, now the shit is real. Now they got a kid. Now they got a house. Now they're really in it for the long run. Like forever, never, you know, until we die stuff. And the name of the episode was called The D Word. And they said a couple of times in the episode, nobody in my family's ever gotten a divorce. Oh, that's not going to be us. No, we're not going to do that. We're not going to get a divorce. Okay, well, you're putting that out there now, but now you're separated.
I'll never get over that. I'll never get over
that. So what are we talking about, really?
Yeah, I don't think she's, I don't see a universe in which Britney's going to be like, okay, more please. And I think that becomes very difficult when you remove yourself from a toxic situation. I don't know how you knock back again on that door. The thing that is helpful to know is that Britney is saying now in real time, I think we've seen it on the show, that like Jax is a really good dad to his son.
Yeah, absolutely, that's important.
You want that. So it's like
you want that.
His toxicity doesn't necessarily extend to being a toxic parent, although he's certainly not treating his wife well in front of his son, which
that's
we don't want.
Important as well, though, you know.
Yeah, so that's something to be said when it comes to parenting.
That's something the Lallys are dealing with as well. That's what I felt so strongly from Michelle when she says she's now seeing that her daughter is watching them bicker and fight. And she's like, her big reason for wanting to go is she doesn't want that to rub off on her daughter, is like, oh yeah, that's normal. That's how two loving people talk to each other, or this is a normal household to live in.
Yeah, he seems to be encouraging that a little bit of like, if Michelle does something she's not supposed to, I'm going to tell her child that she's a piece of shit. Like, that's not a great thing to say out loud.
I am not a Jesse defender, but I wonder if that was a joke. I just wonder if that was a joke because he was in a room full of people.
I don't think it was an oral verbal contract, but just to like the fact that that's Jesse's instincts when it comes to violating Kristen's personal space in her body. And when it comes to like the jokes that he's saying, you can always hide behind it's a joke. Oh, it's a joke. I didn't mean anything. That's passive aggressive.
It is. And there's always a little bit of there's a shred of a truth. There's a shred of truth in every dig and every joke, you know. But I will say too, Katie, she went on someone's podcast. I don't know. I don't remember. I don't care. But she said that Jesse is pretty disgusting and that there's a text chain of just the boys where he has said some really awful things that she is pretty sure are going to come to light. And they were like, well, what are they? Are they sexist? Are they racist? And she's like, it's an ist. And we're going to hear more about it. I'm like, it's an ist. Okay. So I don't know what's going to happen, but he seems pretty awful. He seems pretty stunted. He seems pretty ego-driven and focused on the illusion of wealth and that he wanted a hot wife, but didn't want to think about the maintenance of actually living with a spouse. And now she's dealing with the repercussions of that. It was sad to hear her say that when she first had their child, that, you know, they were in lockdown quarantine and he was very hands-on and then just kind of poof, left them solo. And she can't get over the resentment of being left alone to solo parent for 3 years. That's tough. At the same time, with your $800 pillows on your bed, get some more support, get some more help, and get out of the house, you know, before it gets to that point was sort of my thing. Like, they're really pushing this whole, like, look at us, luxury vacations, we like the finer things. No one that Britney has ever been has been bougier than VPRs on the Jesse. Jesse is the bougiest man I've ever met. Jesse in the white tee? Jesse in the white tee? All right, where's it going? Spend it on childcare then, because your wife's about to dip.
Dipping out.
Needs that shirt. Exactly. That was my throwback. I was doing a throwback.
I think it was hard in that moment to, like, watch Jesse, like, tear up and be like, whatever I can do.
I think that was real. But that's where it's hard to feel bad.
It's hard to feel bad because I'm like, sweetie, everybody thinks that they should be given the option to repair. But first off, what does that literally mean for you? It can't just mean crying. Like, what's the act? And also, like, you don't always get the second chance. I know that these people got married. I know that neither of them thought that divorce was necessarily going to be an option, but you should have been a better man than you were. And it doesn't seem like in real time he really gets it, because he's like shushing her. He's telling her to shut the fuck up.
I know.
Etsy.
And then he didn't even give her his jacket when she said she was cold. She looked like the trophy wife that he's always wanted, right? She's stunning, beautiful in the last episode. And he's like, are you cold? And she's like, yeah. And she's out there, like, beautiful body in this golden dress, and he's like, okay, cool. And then his jacket was hideous. So what would have been so epic is if he had said, do you want my jacket? And she was like, I'm not that cold. I just think about that in my mind and how, like, I would have said that and how amazing that would have been. But whatever. Anyway, missed opportunity. But then, you know, we're in this episode. First of all, the hand in the face when he's like, Michelle, I'm speaking. In the last episode, the way he treats her doesn't align with the please give me a second chance spiel. And he says he stopped her from leaving. They talked for hours. So she's already given him a second chance. That was a year ago that she wanted to move out. She got an apartment lease. She did that work. She showed up to a place and did the paperwork. That's how bad it was. He talked her out of that. And this is still where we are. So come on now.
Yeah, it's a long goodbye, but I don't think that this is, I mean, obviously, have they filed? I mean, they've announced that they've broken up.
They're separated for sure, because the sleuths online pointed out that, like, she has a different place now and they haven't posted something together since, like, a year ago. And so, I mean, and now what we're hearing about this mystery person that she's been off with for days at a time, I mean, this has been coming.
Which, so, word on the street, any number of directors. I looked at, obviously, you can't see the lips are moving.
Oh, I was, trust me, I was eagle-eyeing it.
No, I kept going back.
I watched the way his mouth moved, and I watched the Morse code of his jaw and how many times it went down. I think it was Quentin Tarantino. That's what I think it was.
Okay, so here's my, so some people were saying Michael Bay. I didn't see Michael Bay because it didn't match with what
Doesn't
they were
match.
Saying.
No matchy-matchy.
This is similar to what happened in New York. People were saying Tao, and I said Catch, because I knew the history of bougie restaurants in New York, and I was watching the way they were talking. So I said Catch from day one.
Yep.
When it comes to this, the thing about Quentin Tarantino is he's been married for several years.
I'm aware.
Years.
I did my research.
So I don't think he's like, I think this might be developing a friendship or something, but
totally. It doesn't mean that it was sexual.
Right. So I just want to say, if it was in fact Quentin Tarantino, it's not an affair.
It doesn't mean it was an affair. It doesn't mean it was sexual.
Right. Yes. So I just want to say that for the record. And also, if it was Quentin, like, good for her. Yeah. Have dinner with, like, Brad Pitt or Leo or whomever.
Go,
like,
live. Margot because Robbie. You were left, like, in the house for 3 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Go live your best life. And who knows if some of his upset is because Jesse wasn't invited. Because nobody wants to have dinner with Jesse. Nobody does. Like, go with your, who else could it be, though? Michael Bay, Quentin Tarantino, those are the only two directors we can think of.
Those are the only two directors whose names were floated online before I watched the episode. I truly believe that it is Quentin Tarantino because the way the guys were impressed. So you also have to run it through the bro filter, the dude bro bruh filter. And they were impressed, and they said his name twice, and the jaws aligned with, ba-ba-ba-ba, Tarantino, for everybody who said the name. So I'm convinced that it was that. And again, yeah, it could have just been, you know, he seems like a fun, interesting person, right? That you could just talk about movies with for an afternoon. And he's probably inclusive. He's secure in his marriage, I'm sure. I said on my pod, I heard him on a podcast 2 years ago, and they were playing some gross game. It was all in good fun, but it was a gross game where they're kind of objectifying women. And he opted out of it out of respect to his wife. And so wow. I just don't think that this is how this would go unless they are somehow having a separation. But I don't think that's his style. I don't think that he would do that. And so I think it was just a fun afternoon. You know, you meet creative people, you hang out. And yeah, and especially because Jesse wasn't worried about it. So I think, I don't know, it just wasn't something that was lewd. You know, I think it was probably rich people hanging out at the chateau. I'm more surprised that she can just walk down there whenever she wants to and just skulk about and start conversation with people.
Yeah, 100%. And also, I'm just looking, I just Googled possible directors, and I'm hearing some people are saying, Quentin, some people are saying Michael Bay. One person said Jonathan Glazer, but that
I've heard that
any
as
sense.
Well.
I just wanted Oscar, but that doesn't make any sense because nobody, apologies to Jonathan Glazer, but nobody would have known about him, in that way where it's like, oh my God, this is a big deal.
No, the way the bros were bragging about it. Yeah, no.
So who knows? And now there's some sort of thread that she's might be seeing a former CEO of AOL.
Yep, saw that too. She's not going to have any problem finding some rich capitalist if she is pro don't say gay and she's, you know, used to being a good looking, you know, wife that just wants to hang out. Like if that's her vibe, she's going to find someone to snatch that up in no time.
You know, Michelle's like furiously, feverishly looking up whatever kind of like gotcha explainer she can think of before the inevitable, there better be a Valley reunion, before the inevitable Valley reunion of like trying to explain.
What's
away.
Andy going
to
say? Is Andy, the godfather of Bravo, going to ignore that the entire impetus for this entire season fight is somebody saying that the don't say gay bill protects kids when he's got his jackhole at the end of every episode of Watch What Happens Live where he calls out stuff like that? We've got to address it. He's going to have to address it. If he doesn't, a bollocks on all this show. Like, this is ridiculousness.
Speaking of stuff to address, what's this whole fucking secret that Luke has? What's this whole, like,
I've got a theory.
What is that?
I got a theory.
Tell me.
Okay. I said on my pod, my theory is the way that they cut from him saying, and I've got a secret that could ruin it all. And I was like, okay, well, this is what Kristen is holding over her, lording over her, being like, oh, but I'm not going to retaliate for my own mental health. So your secret is safe with me, but not with Luke. She didn't say it was safe with Luke. I mean, that's what she didn't say in the fine print. So Luke's got this hot potato secret. And he's like, oh, I can't even talk about it. And then they cut directly to Luke saying, but what if Michelle did make a mistake, Jesse? Would you be willing to work through that with her? I think that she has stepped out and Kristen knows it. And then Jesse says, that's my one line in the sand. That's the one thing I can't forgive. That'd be the one thing that I walk. I'm out if that happens. And Luke's like, and all the men just are like playing with pool water and staring at each other like a meme. Like, I think that's what it is.
But then how does his text thing come up?
What do you mean?
The text thread when Katie was saying, I think it was either on Katie's podcast or on Nick Viall when Katie was talking about like the text thread that Jesse has.
Oh, yeah.
And it's gonna
that's
come
just
up.
Jesse being gross. That's just Jesse being a terrible person. That's not connected, I don't think, this.
Oh, I wasn't sure if that was somehow... some kind
no,
of like,
I think I she's something. Just like, I've seen things that I don't like he's gross. And there've been texts that I've seen him send to the guy chats and whatever. So I think that's a separate thing. These people have no shortage of bad behavior. And that's why the Valley's thriving.
Well, thank God that the Valley's number one empath is there.
Oh my, isn't she something?
How are we feeling about Kristen these days?
I had no real knowledge of her other than the snippets of VPR from over the years.
I can't believe you're not a day one VPRer. I can't believe it.
It's because I waited tables. I'll tell you why. It's because I waited tables. And so I turned on VPR thinking it was going to be the waiting tables version of Below Deck, that I was going to see people cursing about their two tops and not having enough, you know, utensils and having to do roll-ups and polish glasses at the end of the night. That is not what they gave me. I hated everybody that was on the show. I hated the men. I was like, I cannot watch them. This is fake working at a restaurant. I can't go. And around that time, like, it wasn't that long ago that I had just, you know, been waiting tables full time to just like survive. And so it was too hard for me to watch them not really work, but then be out in the alley. I'm like, how's your tables doing? You don't know. You're out there smoking. Go crumb a table. Anyway, I couldn't do it.
So back to Kristen.
Yeah.
Kristen as an empath, how are we feeling about that kind of designation? That took everybody.
I mean, her level of delusion is perfect for reality TV. It really is. And also, all I've ever said about what makes somebody good for reality TV is that they cannot think rationally when they need to. It's almost like when Lisa on Salt Lake City couldn't stop arguing with Monica when they were supposed to be quiet at the sound bath, that's that. You want that sprinkle, whatever that gene is, that's what you need. It's just like when Dorinda and Ramona, they were like, important, important. And the woman is trying to make a speech about something extremely serious and touching. And they're like, shh, no, stop. You let me speak. And they are incapable of not locking horns in a setting where you should not be doing that. That is Kristen as well. I don't know why she pulled out of nowhere from her back pocket in a moment of duress. Guess what so-and-so said about you? I don't know why she did that, but that's what makes good reality TV.
It hurts my heart to see Kristen exactly as we left her, but worse. It really, but I think this is maybe Kristen. She's always going to be Kristen. I don't know what growth looks like for Kristen.
Kristen going Kristen.
And it's like, it's really tough to watch. It really, but I love it. Don't ever let her go. If everybody's going to drag her to hell in the finale or whatever, like whatever this is leading up to, like you got to figure out a way to Ramona apologize. We need to have a little apologizer.
Oh, but here's the thing. She has apologized. So that's why the Valley is a wild watch too, because you're like, you don't necessarily need to root for anybody or feel like you have it worked out. What she did was ridiculous and started a bunch of crap. But also, Janet went and was talking about this. What is this? Like, let's look at what this thing is that she just brought up to everybody. But it's like everybody's trying to dodge it and make it about something else instead of talking about what it really was. And Zach is messy, and he knows, and he's sweating. Every scene, he's flop sweating because he knows he did this. He lit a fuse. He handed Kristen something, and he, like, waited. And it shone off. It blew right up. And now he's sweating, trying to put out the fire. Like, well, I just think she's willing to apologize. And it's fine if you guys just have a conversation with her. And I think that we can just bury this. I think we can all move on. We're not going to move on, Zach. And you're going to have to answer for what you did. Because she's already apologized. She's apologized 5 times. And they're still not over it.
I'm 1,000% into Janet and Zach's villain energy. I will talk about it every episode. It is there. It is real. We need to get into it. I am a little concerned it's going to be all against one, rather, when it comes to the finale, when it comes to the reunion, because Kristen's just an easier target. And why would you try to turn on other people?
Yeah.
But we need some turning. We need a little bit of turn.
But here's the thing, too, is that then Kristen says, oh, no, Zach and I have bonded. He realizes that he was just a pawn for Janet's, you know, crap talking. And then Jasmine and Zach are talking crap about Kristen before she shows up. There's no honor amongst thieves in this group, is what I'm saying. Like, I can't put my finger on any true and real alliances other than Kristen and Luke they've got each other's backs. I don't know who really has hers. I thought Brittany did a good job of, she's like the mediator figure. She's really trying to help to bring people together, as is Jax. And I have been impressed with how he's been standing up for her, even if he did attempt an assassination by having her ex-boyfriend show up at the Dave and Buster's knockoff place that they were at.
Also, speaking of her current boyfriend, how are you feeling about Luke?
I don't know what the man does for income. She's very into him. There's a lot of talk about 70 acres, unnamed acres in Colorado. He seems into her. Look, we're happy for people that find happiness. So they seem to be very eager to start a family, and he seems very supportive, and that's what you want out of someone. So that's good.
I wish they lived in the same state as new parents, as potential new parents.
Well, that would be too functional, wouldn't it?
I know. Like, what? This was like a wedding hookup that continued. Not the first one. I mean, Ariana met her current boyfriend at a wedding. Like, it just was like a casual thing that became really serious. Any number of relationships begin that way. It's a curio, honestly. Like, he's just so normal seeming, like a normal person, that I'm like, it's a little jarring to see him on the same show as Jax and, frankly, his girlfriend Kristen. Like, he sort of doesn't belong even a little, but that is in and of itself interesting.
Yeah, I kind of enjoy it. I mean, they were making fun of him at Guys Night, like, oh, he doesn't fit in with us. No, he doesn't. He's a normal person off of the street. But at the same time, isn't he the co-host of her podcast? Didn't they start one together? And then a couple people have told me that, like, he's got, like, some misogynistic views and there's, like, so overtly sexual. I'm like, okay, so pretty much what we see on the show. But, so I don't know.
Wait a second. So I listened to a couple episodes of her pod during Scandoval, like, Heights, but I didn't think, yeah, I guess that was him. I don't remember anything he said, to be honest. I was really only there to hear what she had to say, and I don't remember anything she said because that was a year ago. I mean, decades have gone by since then.
You know, so I think they've got that going together. So he, as much as he says he wants to move back to Colorado, he broke pretty quickly when she's like, no, I need to stay here for a while because I just moved too much in the past, you know, year and a half. And I'm like, I think you're really just seeing if the Valley takes off ratings wise. But, you know, potato, potato.
It is wild to see some of the, like, rental units that people are living in on the Valley. And
girl, let's get you a home. Let's get you some shoes on. Let's get you a home. I know, but it's expensive out there.
Well, it's also just interesting when you contrast it to the between $9,000 and $14,000 a month that people are paying on Summer House to their landlords. It's not a mortgage. It's a rental versus the ways the West Coast is living. I'm like, there has to be a happy medium. There has to be a happy medium between what we're seeing on the Valley and the way that Summer House kids are just shitting away their monthly, whatever, shitting away their wealth. That's tough.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough to watch. Listen, BBDB, I've so enjoyed this deep dive. I've so enjoyed the couple minutes that we have spent with each other today, deep diving, talking, working through some stuff. And by some stuff, I mean my feelings about Jax.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're complex. He's really giving me something complex, and I didn't expect that. When he cleaned up, he said he likes to clean. I was like, well, hey now. All right. Okay, Mr. Clean.
Oh my God. And he's so messy. So I guess that's where he makes up for it.
Is he too? I couldn't tell who was just kind of who's lying to me and who's not. Because
I mean messy with, like, plot and manipulating.
Oh, okay. So that makes sense. He's got to be clean at some point. Yeah, at some part of his life. Okay.
I mean, Jax is in a full term. How could he make time for Brittany? He's in a full term committed relationship with that leaf blower. So.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Something's getting blown, but it seems like it's some foliage in the yard.
As long as he's happy. As long as he's happy with that blower.
BBDB, can you tell the AGs and tippers a little bit about High and Low, where they can listen to episodes, when episodes drop, mention it all?
High and Low podcast dropping every Monday and Thursday. It's an hour of power because I'm a brand new baby podcast. So no ads, no nothing. Just a solid hour of recaps, deep dives, discussion of Bravo news, things that are happening. And I have a YouTube channel. I need to click a button so that all the pods, boom, move over to YouTube, because people like different things in different ways. And then I'm also Bravo, Bravo, Ducking Bravo on TikTok and Instagram. That's also the YouTube handle. So you can't get lost. We feed you back to the different areas. You can't meander around. But it's a fun pod to do. My deep dives are a good time up there. And then things are orderly. My recaps are orderly and labeled in case you want to catch up on a show.
You will be found. And if that's not the mission statement, I don't know what is. Guys, speaking of finding stuff, have you found yourself on the AG Patreon? Number one way to support the pod. You get exclusive bonus episodes and so much more at patreon.com/AndysGirls. Working on a new Patreon app. Couple things to say about Southern Charm and Potomac, and a little bit of a Back to the Future moment that I had watching part three. So listen to that episode and so much more at patreon.com/AndysGirls. Follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley and allegedly Threads. And BBDB, thanks so much for this doubleheader. Is that what you call it? What's it called?
That's what we did. Sports.
We did a doubleheader. We knocked it out of the park. So kudos to both of us. And thanks to all of you for listening. And we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.